This project, now, when you were the first child, were there many involved eventually?
Yes. In fact, there were 140 American school children involved in different aspects of time travel under Project Pegasus. The reason that I distinguished that I was the first American child is that prior to our service, the United States government was consulting with Latin American governments to bring disadvantaged children up from Latin America. And they were, in fact, involved in the, for example, the teleportation experiments before it was known whether it was safe for children to teleport. The initial group were a group of Navy enlisted personnel who were just used to experiment with whether human beings could teleport. And they involved the kids from Latin America. I was in the third group who were children drawn from some of the gifted and talented education programs that were ongoing around the country at that time. And we were a cadre of 140 children from the United States who were bright and physically fit and from stable families. And they were testing, for one thing, they were testing the impact of teleportation on normal, healthy American children, because one of the things they were anticipating is that teleportation would be used to transport the president and other cabinet officials around the world in a time-urgent way, and presumably their children would travel with them. So they wanted to develop baseline data on the mental and physical effects of teleportation on ordinary American children, and I was one of them. I know I was the first because my late father, that is to say the first American child to teleport, because my late father, Raymond F. Bishago, was one of the project principals. He was essentially the point man between the Ralph M. Parsons Company and the CIA on the theory and practice of teleportation. So I first traveled with my dad through a Tesla energetic array at the old Curtis Wright Aeronautical Company facility in Woodridge, New Jersey, in the 1967-68 time frame. And then later, beginning in the fall of 1969, a larger group of children were involved in similar activities.
Was he basically the one who donated you to the government?
No. We don't have a real clear understanding of why I was selected. My father described how he had been approached at work and told that I was going to be placed in the program. So one theory is that actually, because I'm destined to write the whistleblower account of Project Pegasus, the project principals, like my dad, were informed from project principals in the future that I had to be involved because I ultimately would grow up and write a memoir that would tell the tale of what the project accomplished. So it's very possible that, in fact, I was identified in the future, and then my involvement resulted from retrocausation, not from any desire on my dad's part that necessarily that I'd be involved.
Andy, can you kind of describe for us the equipment, the best way you can, what it looked like, the teleportation equipment, the time travel equipment?
Right. Well, the teleporter was one of two principal technologies that they were working with. The basic shop floor model consisted of two parentheses-shaped objects about 8 feet tall. They were battleship gray in color. That stood freestanding on their bases about 10 feet apart from each other. So imagine like big elephant tusks. They were elliptical shaped. Inside the interior of the concave side of these armatures, there were tiny little ports that were generating a blue-green light. Now, between the two armatures, there was a field of radiant energy. The radiant energy, of course, that Nikola Tesla had discovered is latent and pervasive in the universe. And the two armatures could tune in this radiant energy so that it was broadcast between the two armatures. There was little squiggles of light swimming across what looked like, well, if you were 10 feet from the teleporter, the energy field looked like, let's say, water falling in a public fountain. You know, in a public park where water has been used to create a sculpture. However, if you moved up about to 10 feet away from the field of radiant energy, it looked like raster on a black and white TV set. And what we were doing was standing back and then leaping through that field of energy. And when we did, we found ourselves in a vortal tunnel, sort of an interstitial chasm in the fabric of time-space. in which we very rapidly approached a point of light, and then when that pinpoint of light hit our faces, we were suddenly elsewhere in the time-space continuum.
How did they control where you were going, whether it was back or forward?
Well, in fact, initially, we were doing real-time transits, and they couldn't control where exactly we would arrive. So they were using Santa Fe, New Mexico, initially as the receiving area for the teleportation across country. So we were getting there like in 2 or 3 seconds. And they couldn't control where we would be put down in Santa Fe. So one of the tasks that I had in the specialized learning program that they ran us through was to actually memorize the site plan of Santa Fe, New Mexico, including all the street names. Because upon arriving via teleportation in Santa Fe, it was then our task to find the bell tower atop the Bataan Memorial Building, which was the pre-1966 state capitol building in Santa Fe before they built the beautiful roundhouse there in Santa Fe, and just wait for one of the project team leaders to arrive there and the other children who had teleported. So, in fact, they couldn't control where we would arrive, and, in fact, we had another component of specialized education about what might happen if we were lost in time. It was explained to us that we should find the most responsible adults that we could find elsewhere in time and explain to them that our parents had been lost or killed and that could we be adopted into their households. So there was actually a concern when we began teleporting in the late 60s there that we might be lost in time and have to fend for ourselves on the fields of time.
Did anything ever physically go wrong with anybody during these experiments?
Well, I know that it's been conjectured that some of the children were lost in time. I can't confirm that. One of my contact people at CIA was Courtney M. Hunt, who confirmed that in the history of American teleportation, we have lost personnel. I don't remember any of the children being lost in time, but I was an eyewitness to a grievous accident in which one of the boys in the program arrived in Santa Fe standing in about 3 inches of water that had collected in a public fountain there. And the specific gravity of the water caused his feet to arrive a split second later. And so quite tragically, he slid off his feet at the ankles as if his ankles had been passed through a bandsaw and tumbled to the side of the fountain there. And I ran past his location as he was being steadied and held to the ground by one of the team leaders. And so, the American people need to know not only that this technology exists and that it can be used to dramatically improve transportation around the world, but that American children have already paid a high price in bringing about its development.
And what's the farthest time you've gone forward or backward?
Well, that's a very complicated question, and it gives rise to some of the perceived threats to the validity of my story. With teleportation, we could only go back initially within the time envelope that consisted of the existence of the technology. So we were making these short hops back and forth between Woodridge, New Jersey, and Santa Fe, New Mexico, and then jumping back from a teleport at the Sandia National Labs in Sandia, New Mexico, adjacent to the Kirtland Air Force Base. And then we would pop it back into view on the tarmac there at Curtiss Wright. There was another revolutionary technology they were using called the Chronovisor, which didn't physically send somebody to another location in time-space, but sent them there on a sort of physio-virtual basis, sort of as a superluminal superimposition in that time and place. Now, the teleporters, were limited in terms of how far back in time we could go, but because the chronovisors didn't require a chronovisor in the past time to send us back to the present, they were virtually unlimited in the reach by which we could go back in time. So the farthest that I remember that I went back in time in one of the time probes in the holograms that the chronovisors were generating was back to around 1 million BC. I was sent to a hot red earth environment, and I found myself walking along a crest line for about 10 minutes. One of the paradoxes was that the chronovisors opened up an unlimited environment. So I didn't find myself bumping into the wall of the laboratory, but when the hologram was turned on, I could walk literally for miles. And so I walked along this ridge line, and then at the top of the ridge, I looked over to my right, and there were two huge dinosaurs with long necks chomping on tall grass. And we were told that they had sent us to around 1 million BC.